Hello and welcome back to the Lock In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on life in the pub trade by those working in it. We're now into our third season. Remarkable, really, as generally speaking, I didn't give us 6 months. But when you reach the dizzying heights of six listeners, the world is your oyster. As ever, with me for this oral journey into pub life are my favourite two co-hosts, the legends of the sector that are Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. What do you mean you never heard them?
What's that?
I thought when you said he gave 6 months, I thought it was a doctor talking to you.
It would have been. Heath can't hear us on his headset. This is quite good, actually. Might get something in now. So, Heath Ball is an award-winning operator, having taken almost every title under the sun when it comes to the pub game. Although the honour of being voted the UK's sexiest licensee still eludes him, and is likely to continue to unless the judges are blind.
That's really shit.
Oh no, this one gets better. James once came second in the golf competition. It was a crazy golf competition, and he was beaten by an 8-year-old. But at least he tried.
You've had so long to prepare for this podcast.
I haven't really. I literally did it on the back of a matchbook because I was coming home from the pub awards the other day.
And we just have to listen to the worst jokes.
I have a horrible feeling. I might even have recycled that joke from our first series, but never mind.
No one's listening.
No one will notice. That's it. But yes, we are back for a third time with the lock-in, and we've got a great episode ahead of us with more U-turns in the Tory Party conference. Heath, that's because Liz Truss did it, a U-turn at the Tory conference. I just thought I'd better explain it. Guys, had a nice break? Lovely summer?
Lovely.
How many holidays, Heath? Seven? Eight?
I don't know.
Can we just go through where you've been? Let's just break it down a bit. So you were in Ireland a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I was working.
Working. I was with you. You weren't working. It wasn't a holiday, to be fair.
It's annoy you then, Ed.
No, I was working because I was being paid to be there. Heath was just there to eat steak. So
it was a tough gig.
Will Steak Challenge judge accent. Probably won't get you back, will we, for that? But never mind. This week?
Burgundy,
yeah.
Yeah.
Week after next?
Mexico. Listen, we're going to talk about how shit hospitality is.
I was
going to
say,
right,
I mean, it's terrible. It's such a hard life.
I'm out scoping sites out of the UK. I want to get away from this shit fight.
It's the Judith Chalmers of the pub trade. Yeah. One for a certain age.
Exactly. Right, we've got a great episode lined up for you, taking a look at the state of the sector, as quite a bit has changed since we've been off air. One poorly run government being replaced by a squad of chimps, for example. So it's looking good. We will be speaking to UK Hospitality's Kate Nichols and Manchester Knights' our Sasha Lord to get their take on the state of the sector. We'll be hearing from ethical energy broker Neil Wise to get his advice on how to handle the rocketing utility problem. We'll also be talking to top operator Diane Irving about how pubs need now more than ever to broaden their scope and connect with communities, and we'll be discussing what support is out there for operators and how you could be protecting your own mental health with Caroline Jenkinson from the Licensed Trade Charity. So, I mean, it is, joking aside, it is tough out there, isn't it, guys?
I'd like to think we're good operators and we're under it. Like, there's no reprieve. We've got a government that's been absent, and when they come back, they give us shit like the trickle down economics. It's just. Sorry, but fuck!
That's the first one.
It's just. We're really in trouble with the hospitality sector. I think we really are. Mm. Like, I'm more worried about tomorrow than I was during COVID.
Mm.
It's the energy, it's everything. Inflation in the hospitality sector is insane. It's a bloodbath, and what's, you know, like, I'm just thinking, like, you know, I'm looking past Christmas, I'm looking at January, and I'm thinking, what do you do?
Mm.
Like, no one's going to be going out. Mm. Or we're going to be warm areas for people.
Well, there you
what
go.
What is this, 1912?
Well, it is going a bit like that, isn't it, though? I mean, if people are going to be getting to the point where, traditionally, they would have left their homes to go to the pub because there was a fire and heating, because they couldn't afford it at home. Seems like we're going back to
I'm just stuff. Working on an invoice system, like a rental thing. So you sit down at a chair and you have one cup of coffee. You're there for 8 hours. There's the coffee at £1 or £2, and there's the rental of the chair, the table.
You could zone it, couldn't you, near the fire? Like, yeah, you're the hot, like a premium zone.
If you want to sit near
like
the fire.
Ryanair, yeah. Premium economy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No luggage.
But yeah, like, we're really, I think, you know, and we're going to speak to some, you know, obviously Kate and Sasha later, but like, hospitality's on fire. and we're running around with buckets trying to put it out. We don't have enough. That budget was a joke.
Well, that was the biggest concern. Only a week before, there'd been talk about specific sectors getting help, and hospitality was mentioned directly. And
yes.
Then overnight, absolutely disappeared. We all kept waiting and waiting. And is that the trend for the future?
But you look at your energy companies turning around and saying, okay, yeah, hold on, your energy rate's going to be this. You've got 6 sites. Oof. We need $120,000 deposit off you for your energy bill. Like, that's happening.
Yeah.
And we just got quoted a rate for the Lockhart, and it's 85 pence a unit for a 6-month contract, but we needed to be in a fixed contract to get the government thing, paying 70p a unit. So suddenly, like, how are you taking customers on that journey? How are you paying your staff? How are you paying your bills?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're really, like, we're exposed, and they don't care. They're too busy...
I mean, well, the questions to put to Kate and Sasha and to Neil as well, a sort of advice on what we could do with that. I mean, we will come on to some of that. I mean, touching on that Liz Truss barnstorming start.
My God. It's almost like they put her in there and just gone, let's just let her mess it up and we'll be out of power in a couple of years and we'll just make it so bad when Labour come in, they'll spend hours, days, months, years trying to unpick it all. Like, it's... You know, look at the Chancellor's budget. It was almost like, hold on, I'm dreaming. This is not real. Trickle-down economics, oh my God. Like,
That's that 1972 solution
to our problem. And it's never worked. You know what I mean? I saw a great tweet where this guy said, oh, I saw a homeless guy on the street and I felt really sorry for him, so I thought I'll give him £10. So I got my car, I drove to the nearest affluent area, and I put £10 in the letterbox. That's what it's madness.
It'll get down to him at some point, yeah.
Releasing the cap on these guys. It's like, you know, it's the only thing they did, which I kind of agree with, is the making us the shopping capital of Europe by getting rid of tax, having tax-free shopping for everybody. Assume it's for everybody from Europe?
No, I don't know. No, is it?
I assume it was.
From overseas, isn't it?
Well, Europe's not part. We're not part of Europe anymore.
No.
Oh, so you're telling me that's...
I just lost the will to live.
We're not going to do that. But they haven't done it, so there's no real tax benefit.
No.
VAT would have been the obvious choice straight away. Let's drop VAT to 10%. Ireland kept theirs at 9%. Let's drop VAT to 10%. Let's give everybody a fighting chance. But all they're going to do, all the businesses they kept alive through COVID with furlough and grants and loans, they're all going to fail.
Yeah.
And... what are we left with? Witherspoons is suffering.
We're going to come on to that. So, I mean, to be honest, the whole thing, it's almost beyond satire, isn't it? I mean, you couldn't make it up. If you were going to write the script for a comedy programme, you probably would have gone, that's just too unbelievable.
I used to laugh at the shit going on in America. And it's almost like Britain's gone, hold on, hold that beer. And they've waded in. Like, what is this? It's just, people, I go abroad. Well, okay, obviously.
Yeah, a lot.
But I go, people go, you okay? Is everything all right?
That's just you. Everyone says that to you.
they do. They're like, oh, look at this poor homeless guy.
So we outside of that, we had a pub got a noise abatement order for people laughing while we were off air. That was that was fun, wasn't it? I mean,
it wasn't the owners, was it?
No.
Yeah. But is that because they were closed during lockdown? They reopened, and then the neighbours suddenly went, It would be so much better if there was no pub there.
That
was a joke, Ed, just in case you...
I didn't notice that laughter was actually me just sort of involuntary kind of...
So what do we do? Do we just get rid of pubs?
Do you want a pound of that? Isn't it?
And we just have chain restaurants. And I think we've talked about this before. We just have chain restaurants. We just have chain stuff that's really homogenous.
Homogenous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boring.
Big word for you.
Yep. I don't know. I'll write that one down for later. And what do we do? What are we going to end up with? Do you know what I mean? What do we employ?
There'll be government-controlled restaurants, right?
Yeah. And it'll be like the Stimmelsbogen in Sweden.
You'll then have your monthly expenditure taken directly from your salary that you then need to redeem in your government-run hospitality business.
It's tough out there, but some people are doing all right. ARC announced good results, and they're going to open 5 new sites in the next 5 months.
But
are they doing that?
Nah, but it's just they say that and they get more investment and people go, oh, look at them, they're doing so well. Oh, God, I'm making no money there. I might as well go and invest in hospitality. No one wants to invest in hospitality. We're the Titanic. No one wants to put money in this business.
We know
all they hear is bad news. Yeah, but all they hear is bad news. Energy bills, no staff, you know what I mean? The Tories absolutely screwed us when they made hospitality an unskilled labour. So all these posh kids who went to mum and dad and going, oh, I want to be a sommelier. What, you want to like work in hospitality? Yeah. All the posh kids' parents went, no. And then we were unskilled and we're not worthy of anything except collecting glasses and washing plates. So they absolutely screwed us. And that's why we won't bring staff from anywhere else, because we're unskilled.
I mean, I'm enjoying the fact that we're back, you know, Heath as upbeat as ever. No, it's consistent, I suppose. It's consistent. Right, I'm going to park that one there because we are going to join our first guest in a second.
So. Who's that?
Good question. We'll find out.
You don't even know.
Slick. This is the Lock-In Podcast, and we're now talking to Kate Nichols from UK Hospitality and Manchester's nighttime economy advisor and operator, Sasha Lord. So, guys, welcome to the Lock-In Podcast. I mean, we're talking in this episode all about sort of the current situation. We've come back after a break in the summer. Everything was shit when we went on the summer. It's gone to shit even more. What's happening? Where do you see things at the moment? I mean, Kate, what's your take on the current situation?
Well, I think the current situation, you probably sum it up as saying it's grim. Mm. I mean, I think it's the toughest trading environment that I've ever seen working in 30 years in hospitality. For many operators, it is harder to navigate than COVID. See, it's called the Lockdown Podcast because it was in lockdown. But at least then you knew what was happening. You knew what the support packages were. But this perfect storm of a tsunami of inflationary cost pressures, a consumer downturn and a crash in consumer confidence, coupled with a lack of staff to be able to open fully, energy bills that we've never seen before, and on top of all of that, somebody's just thrown fire on the fuel, because you've then got the global macroeconomic market uncertainty and the uncertainty caused by our government. So, you know, as an operator, you can't plan. There is an inability to really look at what's happening in your business, and so much uncertainty piled on top of uncertainty that you just don't know where you stand. And, you know, you don't have any line of sight beyond the next 3 to 6 months in reality. So I think it's pretty bleak, to say, pretty grim. There are opportunities for us to be able to try and get that back on track and to be able to get some clarity for businesses as soon as possible about additional support and longer-term support that might be available. But I just fear it will come too little too late unless we can get that sorted in pretty tall order.
Well, let's come back onto that. I mean, in the meantime, I mean, Sasha, what's your take? How are you viewing the market at the moment?
Kate's
just
right.
Put a gun to his head, but
yeah. No, I mean, Kate is absolutely spot on, and as usual, far more eloquent at explaining it than me. Now, I have to say, and this is wrong, I don't condone this, Ed, but I am speaking to a few operators at the moment who've already made the decision they are going to close come January unless support's coming. And what they're doing, and, you know, I don't condone it, but I understand it. They've got to pay bills. They've got to look after their family. You know, they're just going to take the cash out over the next few months, hope for Christmas trade, and then shut. But my issue there is they're going to fold the companies, and what's that going to do to the supply chain that they owe money to?
Yeah,
I think that's coming down the lane. And I think, I know both myself and Kate were bitterly disappointed that we didn't get help with VAT and business rates last week. And I have to say as well, you know, on another level, I was very disappointed because I saw some of the reaction that came out from that, and people were calling Kate out and calling me out, you know, why did he get this, why didn't he get that, and it just seemed absolutely ridiculous. And you know, a lot of those people calling them out, I've never seen one of them in any of those meetings. You know, we've seen Kate go to every single party conference over the last 3 weeks. She's not doing that because she enjoys it. She's doing that for a reason. And I think if there's a time more than ever before, is you've got to get behind the voices that do matter and the voices that are fighting, like Kate, UK Hospitality, like myself, like NTIA, you know, other organisations. Just fall in line, fall behind us, because we are trying to do the right thing for you. And it's no good this niggling and argumentative that's going on in the background. We all want the same thing.
I mean, I don't know why I'm looking at you, Heath.
What do you think? I, you know what I mean? I'm trying to be measured here because like, I'm finding it tough, and I'd like to think I'm a good operator, and James down here and all that. Do you think we need to be a bit more hardball with the government? I just feel like we're not getting behind it because we're all so conflicted in the industry about what's right and what's wrong. But I almost feel like, as what, the third biggest employer in the country, it's almost like we need to get their attention. And I'm not going crazy like Mick Lynch and, you know, the train strikes, but we need help. And I don't want to ask for help because I think that all I want is fair taxation, and we don't have fair taxation in hospitality. Business rates are unfair. We could have left VAT longer, but the government don't seem to be listening to us. And well, listen, I support you guys 100%, but we all need to get behind you. But we need to be like, how do we play
tough? Do we need to be more radical, I think, is
yeah,
what
I think,
what
how do we
to,
be,
to,
you know what I mean?
To
I'm
translate
not,
the Kiwi here.
You know, I mean, I'm not ripping off, you know, our burkas down in Iran, but I'm just saying, how do we stop? How do we actually make them listen to us and care about us? Because, you know, granted, the Tory government 2 years ago said we're unskilled labour, but how we actually contribute so much to society, we need to be valued. How do we do
that? I think, you know, I don't sound like Martin Lewis because he's a genius, and I'm clearly not, but you know, it feels like you're running out of tools. When we were going through that COVID period, you know, there were tools that had to my access. I took them to court, High Court, got them to turn over the substantial meal ruling and stuff.
Yeah, well
like
done.
That. But I think you're right, we need to do something drastic. We need to grab the attention. I know that the right people, and we like Kate to having the right conversations with the right people. But I think, you know, the public, again, is turning back on our side. And if there's one thing that was positive out of COVID, we were definitely a voice. And I think the public quickly saw how badly we've been treated. And it's so, you know, I hate to say this, but every day now we're seeing more and more and more businesses close. And they're closing and they're making redundancies. And they are going to have to look and learn and listen and work with us.
Is it going to be too late, though?
No, I do think, you know, just to put the sort of a slightly more positive note, you know, the first thing she did, the first statement she made in the House of Commons as Prime Minister was to single out hospitality as a vulnerable sector needing support. The Chancellor mentioned it. It was mentioned when we got the business support package. I know for lots of the people in the business, lots of operators, lots of people on the podcast, it will not be enough. It's never going to be enough. There's nothing we can do, however hard we work, that will be enough to compensate our businesses for what they've gone through and what they are going through. But they do get it. They are listening. They are working with us to try and look at solutions. And I think, you know, the answer to Heath is, you've got to have everybody in the industry saying the same thing, not five or six or seven different messages, not 10 different asks. Everybody's saying the same thing. Many voices, one ask. I get a lot of people who'll mouth off on Twitter. And then I say to them, have you written to your MP? What's the point? Unless we all do that, unless we pick up the pen, we do things on emails, we make those points, and we ask for the same thing, it doesn't get elevated up in the list of asks. You know, this is the way politics works. It's weight of numbers of people telling backbench MPs who tell ministers that unless they do something, they've got real problems. But everybody in the industry needs to get behind what we're asking for and join in and participate.
So okay.
It's a divided industry and a fragmented industry. Government will not listen to it.
Yeah.
There's also a very fine line because government isn't going to save a dying industry. So we have to be able to present the opportunity that if they support us, we'll be able to deliver their agenda. They want jobs, growth and investment in very short order in 18 months. The fastest way to do it is to support hospitality. So that, you know, it's not about supporting us because we are a deserving cause. It's about supporting us because it delivers their agenda.
Yeah.
So it has to be bluntly as that. But everybody has to get behind it.
So what should we be asking for? If we're all going to get together, if we could ask for one thing, what should we be asking for?
I am absolutely adamant, and I think Kate's going to agree. I'm going to look an idiot if she doesn't.
Disagree, Kate.
That is the one.
I 100%
agree. One thing that I think will save the industry. And you know, I'm no accountant, but it doesn't take a genius, does it, to work out. It is far, far better to take 5% or 10% of something than 20% of nothing, yeah, because that is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we're talking one thing, I mean, we had a 3-point plan when we were going in to talk about energy. If we're talking about one thing that benefits all of the industry, that gets cash to businesses on day one, that protects and restores margin, that keeps prices insulated for consumers and therefore has a deflationary impact, it's a cut in the headline rate of VAT.
So this is where I struggle, though, because, I mean, we talk about, you know, that we need to be patient, there's going to be more support, they're going to do something. And you just said yourself, Kate, you know, they want it fast, they want growth, they want stability, they want all this fast. Why the bloody hell did they not do this in that mini budget? Why on earth did you not pull that lever to deliver an instant shot in the arm to our sector? I mean, I know the answer, really, let's be honest about it, because, well, we can look at what's going on and we can draw our own conclusions from the quality of our political leadership. But why not? I mean, that's just such a simple thing to have done. And they didn't do it.
It was in the mix. They looked at a range of policy options. We know it was considered over the summer. I don't think it's taken finally off the table. There are all sorts of reasons why people make political decisions in the way that they did. And you know, that was quite a surprising fiscal event. If I use civil service underspeak, you know, quite surprising, very bold minister, some odd decisions. But, you know, they are only 4 weeks in. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's continue the lobbying. They are only 4 weeks in. They've told us that they want to work with us on a package of support for vulnerable sectors like hospitality by the end of the year to look at what happens. And I think the honest answer on the VAT point, if you're doing headline rate cut in VAT, when you've got inflation at 11%, they would have immediately been criticised for doing something that could have been seen to be inflationary. If you look as though you've got inflation under control, then I think there's more appetite for it. So we have to continue to ask.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's why we put it in a package of three.
Go on, Sasha.
Just on that note, I would say 23rd of November is now such an absolutely critical date. And it probably won't surprise anyone listening to this where my political allegiances lie, especially the advisor to the Labour mayor. But it was actually Andy Burnett himself who said to me, it is far, far easier to work with people, to work against them. And if they deliver this VAT on the 23rd of November, then sadly, you know, for many, it's too late. But hats off. To me, that will show that they have actually engaged and they have actually listened to the sector. It has come late. But potentially that will save many businesses, especially for that January, February, March quieter period.
Yeah. And what do you think the chances are?
And that's sorry, key. That's what they're looking at is, you know, what does the economy look like? What does job losses look like? Where does it stand? I think Sasha's absolutely right. That 23rd of November, critical date. So we need to all push on it.
We've got that, Chris. James just said, so what are the chances? What are we thinking then?
I was going to say, should there be, around that date then, should we have one message that we
all go at, yeah,
at a certain time, we take it, we cut and paste it, we put it on all channels, you know, we really attack this, that rallying cry. And
yes.
So tell us,
asking for is what we've had all the way through COVID. We've always had standard letters, template letters, here's the message, here's the campaign toolkit, here's the cut VAT message. All of that we've done, and we just need everybody to actually use them this time.
Yeah. Well, this is you, Ed. This is on you now.
That's my fault.
This is on you now. That, so. You get all the people who read your magazine, five of them,
eight, yeah,
get together, and we can push
the
this.
The six listeners we have.
Yeah, we can push this.
We can do that.
So my second question to both of you was, as a percentage, what do you think our, and I do need a number, do you think our success will be of getting this on the 23rd?
I'm a natural pessimist, so I do think this is slim. I think it's an uphill battle, but if people don't do anything, we're going to get nothing.
Yeah, I'm with Kate on that. Let's charge down.
I do think it is a slim chance.
Okay, so
just on that, I think Kate's right. I think if everybody listening to this just sits on the bums and just sits behind a keyboard, nothing's going to happen. You know, if people actually are very active and screaming for this, you know, give us the VAT, that will save our businesses, that will save jobs. Get the message across.
Okay.
if I had to put a percentage on it, I think, you know, 30%, I think, chance probably, one in three.
But we shouldn't be disheartened. We shouldn't be disheartened by that. That's, I think that's a key thing, isn't it? We can't just go, you know what, it's a slim chance or it's a 30% chance. What's the point? Because that will fulfil that prophecy, won't it?
Look, Tory MPs are very, very good at one thing, and this is really the Tory party very, very good at one thing, which is self-preservation. And they are desperate to keep their jobs, and they are desperate to keep their constituencies. Yeah. So they are spending much more time in their constituencies. Write a message, ask if you can go to a surgery, invite them to meet you in your pub, send them a letter. That's the way this works, if we've got that weight of numbers. But if they're getting big pushbacks about this, saying we're still struggling, the support's not enough, and what we need is VAT, they won't do anything. If we do all of that, they'll be lobbying the Chancellor, because you're telling them, you know, if every pub employs 10 people in their patch, think how many pubs they've got, think how many jobs are at risk. And you need to cascade it down. So do it as the owner-operator. Do it, get your managers to do it for all the sites if you're a multi-site manager and operator. Cascade it down to your staff. Ask them to do the same to make it real about their jobs. Cascade it out to your customers. You've got your Facebooks. You've got your social media. Yeah. Get it out there.
Absolutely. No, brilliant. I mean, that's, I'm conscious we're out of time, guys, but I mean, yeah, I think we've all got to pull together. We've all got to shout. I will, I'll get the links from you, Kate, for the tools that people can use. We'll put it on the website with this. Our six listeners will respond, I'm sure. Thank you very much for that. Fingers crossed.
Let's just hope they don't live in the same constituency. Let's hope at least they're scattered.
All six letters to one MP. Brilliant. That'll be great.
I'm looking forward to the launch of this campaign, Ed. We've got 6 weeks.
Excellent. Good, good. 6 weeks, six listeners. Perfect. One a week. One a week. Brilliant. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for that. Thank you. We shall catch up with you soon. You're listening to the Lock In podcast. Myself, Ed Beddington, Heath Ball, and James Cuthbertson. We're now going to take a look at the energy situation. I'm delighted to welcome ethical energy broker Neil King from the Wiser Sourcing Group. And I think you're also an operator as well, Neil. So I guess you've got a bit more of a broader perspective on this.
Yeah, I've got. I'm one of the directors at Gateshead Masonic Hall Company. It's a small community Masonic Hall in Gateshead, Tyne and Wear. So we operate a restaurant and a bar from there. So yeah, I get to see from both sides of the table.
Fantastic. Okay, brilliant. So I mean, before we get into the meat of the current situation, you describe yourself as an ethical broker. I mean, is there any ethics in utilities at the moment? It seems quite tough out there. Tell, what is an ethical broker?
Well, I think to be ethical, so if I can roll back a little bit, I spent nearly 30 years with IBM as an IT specialist, and I ended up being tired of travelling around, working out in Italy for a number of years with a family at home. So a friend of mine offered me a role as a business development manager at what was classed as a cost management consultancy based up here in the Northeast. I had no knowledge of the energy broker industry or even business energy in that sense. I joined the business, and as a sales professional, someone who's who'd completed IBM Global Sales School, kind of, it's a bit like the apprentice on steroids. So you get trained to a professional level and a competent level of selling to blue chip companies, but also you get to understand how departments need to communicate to make the sales process effective. And the first thing I found is that these departments within these businesses, business energy companies, weren't working together. They were very, very separate. And I quickly found out you had lead generators, then you had closers, and it was a really strange place to work. I quite quickly found out that they were pretty much going into businesses, having a look at opportunities to save them costs across the board, whether that be waste, water, card payment services, telecoms, IT. But the crux of it was they wanted the energy bills, and I very quickly found out that they didn't disclose commissions. They would put people on the highest rate possible for the longest term contract with the highest amount of commission in, And all the while, the customer was conditioned. Look, energy rates today might be 50 pence. I'll see what I can do. And when they go back with a 42 pence rate, the customer thinks they're getting a deal. So the customer will sign up. What they've not been told at that point is, it's a five-year contract. And they've not been told that the actual base rate is probably around about 40 pence. So they were making 5 pence per unit. And if the customer's using 100,000 kilowatts a year, you've got 5 year, 500,000 multiplied by the pence commission they're making.
Yeah.
And some of these people were making 20, you know, anywhere from $2,000. I've seen people high-fiving on a £1 million deal taken from a business.
Yeah.
So I had a bad experience where a large charity was were told that they were going to get a £5,000 saving. They'd been stitched up previously by another big northeast energy company, and they were they were told that they'd get five grand saving, but they'd also get a £5,000 donation because the energy company loved what this charity was about. And my colleague then later found out that they'd actually could have realised the saving of £50,000, and the energy broker had taken £40,000 in undisclosed commissions from the customer.
Oof.
Now, exactly. Mm. So I took a look at my energy contracts for the Masonic Hall, for the pub and club, and I found out that I'd also been taken for nearly £8,000.
Right.
Now, what you'll find is, you'll hear brokers who will say, I know, but when you go to a restaurant, you don't ask the restaurateur how much he paid for the fillet steak you're ordering. No, you don't. But when you're acting on behalf of a customer and you're claiming to have their best interest at heart, by God, you should be informing that customer of what the energy base rate is, what your commission uplift is, what that's going to look like across the term of the contract, and why you're choosing it. Because I know there are people out there who might provide the customer with five different suppliers, but on a one-year contract, they might put, say, for example, one supplier, they might put 2 pence uplift in to make it unattractive. And the supplier who pays them the biggest commission, so some suppliers pay people, some suppliers will pay people 80% up front.
Yeah.
So therefore, that supplier becomes most attractive to the broker because they're getting 80% of the commission up front. So all they'll do is they'll increase the rate of commission on all of the other suppliers to make them look unattractive to the customer. And when the customer looks at the quotation, he'll go, oh yeah, I see, you know, such and such supplier is the best deal. But what the customer's not been shown is the uplift applied to all of the other suppliers is way more than the one that's been applied to the one that looks most attractive to them.
It's game net. Yeah, so absolutely.
It's unscrupulous. So one thing I did, when I set up Wider Utilities, I started broadcasting out on social media. People need to be asking the questions, the important ones that I put out on lots of other groups as well as the publicans groups, and I can always get battered down by the other energy brokers whose main employment role is to be energy brokers. They don't see it from our side of the fence. So I get battered down by that, and they need to be asking the brokers to demonstrate why do they recommend them suppliers, what uplift are they applying to that supplier for each term of the contract, what consumption are they using, what's the base rate, what's the total commission? Because only then will you get transparency in the industry. Okay. And
but isn't the perception, James, isn't the perception that you don't really, I mean, the perception I think maybe is that you don't really have a choice in that your energy supplier is your energy supplier. You're just getting someone to try and cut you a deal. Well,
I had it recently with my broker I've used 15 years at the Red Lion and Sun. And when this all shit fight's happening and the energy prices, I rang him up and he said, honestly, mate, you're better off calling Eon or one of your providers direct and negotiating direct, because I'll put on what I make out of it and I don't want to do that to you, so just ring them yourself. And I rang them and I got a quote, and I rang him back and I said, this is what they're offering me. He goes, I mate, take it, because I'd be loading mine. So just
I mean, that's somebody being honest and transparent.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you're it's a difficult one for you to answer, Neil. You know, should operators be going direct, or should they be going, what are the benefits of going to a broker?
So here's an example of why it can be beneficial to go direct, but it's also equally important to get a price from broker, because again another quite large northeast golf club had approached me and they asked me for a quote. I gave them the quote. I didn't realise, but that they'd compared my quote against a big, well-known UK gas company, and it basically came back nearly 9 pence difference.
Right.
So there is an illusion that the suppliers offer you a better rate because you're cutting out the middleman.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to blurt on about the level of service, the quality of service, what kind of customer support you get from a broker, because I can't do that, because some brokers are smash and grab. Yeah. Some brokers will get in there, they'll take the deal and they'll be away. You want someone who's going to be there to help you and support you across the term of the contract.
Mm.
Now, the suppliers, I think, have cottoned on to how much they can elevate their rates, because customers now think, let's cut the middleman out, go direct to a supplier, someone like E.ON or British Gas. And actually, like I say, British Gas were nearly 9 pence higher than the rate I was able to give them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was a British Gas Lite product means that it's an online product. You can't just pick the phone up and ring them for support. Yeah. Whereas the advantage of having a broker or a good broker is someone like me is with you for the term of the contract.
Mm.
I'll have some of your publicans out there who ring me 11 o'clock on a Friday night, or, you know, or Easter Sunday afternoon. There was one woman who rang us up and from the Mariners, and she was at a funeral, and the power had been lost. Everybody's power in the street had come back up. She wasn't there. A manager was panicking because they didn't have no energy. So I gave her all the information that she needed, who our local grid was, who our local supplier was, and I actually picked the phone up and got in touch with them and just said, right, you need to press and hold the meter button to reset the meter. Got the power back up, but not every broker does that.
Yeah.
So
there are benefits to having that. I mean, the current situation though we're facing, you know, it's pretty grim for a lot of operators. I mean, where do you see things going? I mean, are you looking at any forecasts? I mean, what's the situation from your perspective?
So I've been, over the last few months I've spent, there's not been a huge amount of business coming in, and that's because I've chosen not to take it. So what you've got to look at is, if anyone has been on variable rates, the variable rates chance to have been a lot better than what the offer has that's been out there from suppliers.
Yeah.
Now, going back to quarter one of this year, when a lot of the brokers were saying, we're coming out of COVID, get a variable contract, I'd noticed that there was a lot of military action going on in the Donbass region, and that Russia were performing all of these exercises, but that they were building these field hospitals. So there's a lot of insights out there that brokers can use that will give them a huge benefit. So I was saying to my customers, I would go for maybe a 12-month fixed contract, because why are they building field hospitals if it's only an exercise, and why are they sending, you know, like life-preserving things like plasma, blood, if it's only an exercise? And luckily they did. I also used Cornwall Insights. So they gave a good overview, good forecast, and looking at where we are at the moment, the situation is gas has been strangulated coming into the EU. Our prices are tracked against the EU. We use very, very little gas from Russia. A lot of our gas comes across the North Sea.
Mm.
However, the EU gas prices set the precedent, and then our energy prices are tracked against the price of gas. The government are looking at forcing a change where you're going to look at any of the generators who might use wind, solar, and the energy there is forced generated on a cheaper scale. That should be reflected in the energy price for that renewable energy.
Absolutely.
Whereas at the minute, everybody's tracks against the gas prices, so that's why the sky high. So if we look at Europe, you know, there's a lot going on in Russia, in the Ukraine, which is massively affecting the energy markets. The alternatives are, we've tried Saudi, we've tried Saudi, we've tried other places to get energy from, and we've been denied it. We've tried to get more liquid natural gas exports from the US. They have ramped it up quite a bit, but we're not looking until the back end of 2023 until we start getting more of it from them. the situation in the UK is going back to when I'm 50 on Saturday, but looking back to when I was a youngster, and a lot of people out there will recognise this, is around the outskirts of the towns and cities, we used to have these great big gas storage tanks, and they all went during the, you know, where they were targets for the IRA. So we've got nowhere to store gas. So we might ramp up all of this liquid natural gas, but where are we going to store it?
Pubs.
So pubs.
Empty pubs. Yeah.
Empty pubs around the UK.
So where are we going to store it? So, you know, we've got to look at that. We've got to look at renewables. How long is it going to take to get renewable farms up? It's certainly longer than 12 months. So I'm thinking now it's going to take a while to get ourselves out of this. And this, the government cap that's going on at the minute, what we've got to do is as customers, with my energy broker hat off and me publican's hat on, we've got to not get blindsided by the energy cap. Don't bury our heads in the sand, because if you've got a contract that's coming up for renewal over the next 6 to 12 months, when that cap's released, we're going to see the return of the normal wholesale energy costs. Now, while we're all burying our heads in the sands, enjoying the bit of
what do you mean? What do you mean normal? Like what we were paying before the war? Like, are we looking at going back to, like, you know, 12, 17 pence a unit? Or are you saying normal is what we've agreed? The new normal.
Well, right. So while we've got the cap, we're going back to spring prices last year. Okay. Now, while we're enjoying those cap. In the background, you've got the wholesale energy rates, which are going to keep climbing up over the winter.
Okay.
But we're not going to get hit with them over, because the government are capping
protected.
Us.
Yeah.
So what will happen is, at some point when the government lifts the cap, I kind of sense maybe they'll give us another 6 months. But at some point, that cap's going to be taken away.
And we'll revert back to those higher prices, yeah.
Exactly. So I think we might, you know, we've got to not get blindsided. We've got to keep an eye on what's happening with the energy prices, because if they continue to climb over the winter and we've got people sitting on out of contract rates hoping that, you know, April next year they're going to get a better rate, but we're not guaranteed that.
Isn't the advice to get into a contract so you can benefit from the government support?
Exactly. So the government have structured the energy relief schemes, the business energy relief schemes, really well. Because they're trying to push people into a fixed contract, because they benefit more from it. So rather than sitting on deemed rates, because remember, I had customers back in quarter four last year who were faced with the steep rise in the energy costs, and a lot of the mentality was, oh well, we wait until we get out of winter, until April comes, and we'll enjoy the new spring prices, the start of for the following year. Now the Ukraine happened, didn't it? So the energy prices, that break never came.
So what
they found is they were out of contract, then they tried to get a contract, the suppliers withdrew all of the offers to take on new customers, so a lot of people were stuck in a situation where they were on out of contract rates, and at any point a 30 days notice, most of the suppliers can change the terms and conditions are being changed, so they're allowed to do this. So within 30 days, you'll find that those rates can increase, and you can't do anything about it. You've got to then try and get a contract within the 30 days. Now, what happens over the next 6 months if we're burying our heads in the sand and the energy price keeps climbing over the winter, and you've got people coming out of contract quarter one, quarter two next year, quarter three, and they're going to get hit with massive rates? We just don't know what's going to happen, which is why I think that's most unsettling for me.
Yeah. I'm afraid we are out of time, though, Neil. I think we could probably talk about this for most of an entire episode of a podcast, but we are out of time. But thank you for that. Hopefully there's some interesting insight there for both James and Heath and our listeners. So thank you very much.
Very much.
Thanks. Thank you, guys. Take care.
This is the Lock-In Podcast. Now, with everything going on, there is a huge amount of stress for operators across the sector. I just feel stressed reading the text I get sent by Heath when he's having a bad day, so it is painful, not just his text. However, mental health is a key aspect which often gets ignored, so I'm delighted to welcome Caroline Jenkinson now from the Licensed Trade Charity to chat about this and the support that's available to operators. So welcome, Caroline.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks very much for having me this afternoon. And Heath, if you are stressed, you can phone our helpline. I'm going to tell you about that a bit later.
You don't want that.
The time I finished talking to them, they'd be in tears themselves.
It's not good. It's not
the offer is there anyway.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, we are finding a massive demand on our services. It's really weird because I was doing some stats just before I came online, and we obviously, our helpline consists of two teams, okay? The first one is to be able to provide emotional support. So that can be, you can just phone. And we're trying to promote a lot more and more is you don't have to phone our helpline in a crisis. You can phone them if you're having a bad day. What we want to try and do is like make our helpline, I know this sounds a strange sentence to say out loud, but a bit more lighthearted. You know, a lot of people will talk themselves out of getting help because they don't think they're serious enough or they're not in enough crisis. So basically our helpline's open 24/7, 365 days a year. They're a really lovely team of people and they can help anyone that's worked in the licensed trade industry, whether it be for 30 minutes or 30 years. Just to give you a very brief background, that the definition of who we can help is anyone that sells, manufactures, distributes or serves alcohol. So I'm sure that's probably nearly everyone in the room and their staff.
It's all six of our listeners.
Yep. So it doesn't matter what position you hold, you can get our help. We've been around for quite a few years, 229. So we've got a bit of experience of, I think they were called impoverished licensees when we first opened.
You're calling them again now.
You know, 229 years later, it's still the same. You're slightly impoverished. So, the one team are emotional, can deal with emotional support. You can phone them just to vent off. Nothing gets back to anyone else. It's confidential. They don't judge. They're a great bunch of people. We chose them especially because we wanted them to be pubified. We thought that was really important. So we've had some, for those that are happy to share the story, they have been really delighted with how the helpline have treated them. The other team, which I think will be quite needed now, are what they call information specialists. So they can deal with things like debt, housing issues, consumer complaints, employment issues, management issues. And a lot of people don't know that the helpline helps with that sort of thing. So just, we did some round tables only last month. We did them in three venues in Bath, London and Birmingham. And what part of the remit was to ask all of these different operators, they were large and small, it was a great cross-section of people, what kept them awake at night. Okay, it was quite a lot. But basically, you know, it was, I think they said everything, how they treat their staff, and we treating them right. We haven't got time to counsel them, but we feel really guilty about that because we haven't got time. They're having to promote people that haven't been with them that long because of the staff shortages. They're promoting people a bit before their time. So those guys feel really out of depth, which is not fair on them, but they, you know, they're sort of the general managers, assistant managers are plate spinning all the time. And we totally empathize with that and want to help. So what we're trying to promote now is those newly, you know, like newly promoted supervisors, they're going to be really stressed about supervising people. You know, like at 1 minute they're your mates and then you're promoted, and I think that's a really hard place to be, because you haven't got the experience, but you know you want to do well. So you can phone our information specialist and say, look, I've got this person that keeps coming in late, how can you help with that? You know, someone's got a personal hygiene problem, how can you help with that?
It's ironic, so, isn't
you know,
it?
I don't know why you're looking at me, James.
I think you smell great, Edward.
Thank you.
I've got some perfume with me as well. So, you know, what we want to do is any operator, I mean, obviously operators, if you times the stress with frontline people by about 120, I'm sure that's how they're feeling, because they have to wear so many hats. And a lot of the operators that we spoke to just said, we feel like we're not doing enough. And I felt that was actually, on a serious side, quite sad. So another thing that we're going to put in place next year, it won't be this year, because we want to get the right training, is we want to put into place some resilience training. Because we've done mental health training, and I think a lot of people have done their first aid mental health courses now, and you know, a lot of key people within industries. But what a lot of people haven't done is, how resilient are you? And funny enough, we asked those operators, I think there were about 50 of them in the end, tell me what the definition of resilience is. It's when everything else goes wrong and you can't do anything else, you have to be resilient. And that was a bit of a sad state of affairs, because you can always be resilient, you know, and it doesn't have to be a complete crisis to be resilient. But what really helps is if you're in that awful perfect storm in a pub where everything's going wrong, customers are complaining, your staff are on edge, your supplies haven't come in, you're worried about the cost of living, and you feel like you're going to implode, what we want to do is give these people in the moment calming mechanisms, just to sort of live through another hour. Because I think, and I'm sure you agree, Ed, that at the moment it is like hour by hour running a pub as an operator. It's you don't know what's going to happen around the corner. So we're going to do it on about 3 or 4 ways.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, are you finding that, Peter James? Is it that intense? Do you think?
No, I think it's really that intense. I there's no reprieve. We've come out of lockdown. We've done all that. And we've dealt with that. And we've been upbeat. And we've been dynamic. And we've done all these things. And we've tried to be really super positive. And then you've got a government just walking all over us and don't care about our industry. And it's like heartbreaking. The energy bills, and they'll say they've done that, and it's amazing. Mm. It's not. It's not enough.
This isn't the helpline, by the way.
What they didn't realise, we don't want handouts, but we want fair tax. Mm. And we're under it all the time. You're looking at everything. You've got your staff stressed because their bills have gone up and the food's costing much. And you've got everybody coming at you. And when you go home, your head's just...
How do you deal with that, other than generally sending us abusive text? I mean, how do you cope with that?
I don't know. I try and, like, drink. You know, in the old days before I'd done my back, and I'd go to the gym and try and work stuff out. But it's just brutal. Like, you know what it is? It's like you've gone 10 rounds with Mike Tyson and you've got out of it and you're sitting in the corner, and then you think the fight's over, and then the government turn around and we have this cost of living crisis and everything else. You're just like, at what point do you just go, enough's enough? Mm. Just give us a break. But I can't. Yeah. You've seen operators every day just going, enough's enough. And we're losing good operators who make, you know, have good businesses, just going, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? We don't have light at the end of the tunnel.
What's the sort of sentiment you're getting on the helpline at the moment, Carolyn? Is it similar?
It's precisely that. So we can't, you know, if we could at Licensed Trained Charity and change all that, we would, because we feel like we work in the trade. You know, we're quite passionate about how people in the trade feel and what we can do to help. I think the sense I got from the round tables, because these were big pub companies like Stonegate, it was Fuller's there was Independence there. It was a brilliant cross mix, you know, from all types of pub co's. They were saying that sometimes they're so overwhelmed, they feel like they can't even think. And they just want to vent their spleen, and that's what we're encouraging people to do now. Just, you know, like when you've had a really crap day and you go to the pub, and you have, obviously you have a few drinks as well, but you know, just offloading with a bunch of mates makes you feel a whole lot better. What we want to do is say that team of people are there. If you know, if it's getting to that point where you feel like walking out the pub, don't do that, ring us. And from a point of view as well, we hope that we will deal with what we hope to is that leads to retention, because if someone offloads, they may not walk out that day, causing even more stress to the management. So we see it as a retention tool as well as a support tool, really.
Fantastic. Okay. I'm conscious of time. We will give the details of the helpline on this. I mean, what key piece of advice would you just offer quickly to the listeners on this?
Just don't be afraid of asking for help. You know, I know people in the trade are quite stubborn. I'm quite a stubborn person as well, so I know what it's like. But the feedback we get from the people we help, and these are people like you, your mates, your friends, the ones that have helped phone the helpline about any, and obviously we don't deal with business debts, I'm afraid. If we had loads of money, I'd love to pay off everyone's debts, but I think even we'd be bankrupt. But you know, if there is something that's really troubling you, phone them then, as opposed to for it to get to a crisis, because what we don't want to do is get people that are so ill they can't even run the pub anymore because of their mental well-being. So just phone us. We're great, we're friendly, we're there all the time. We've done it for a long time, so we sort of know our onions.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Carolyn. Thanks for that.
Okay, you're welcome.
Cheers. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast with Ed Beddington, James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball. So we've heard all about the challenges we're facing and some of the help that might be out there. But we also need to help ourselves. Pubs need to spread their wings and be more than just a pub. Talk about this, I'm delighted to welcome a top Cumbrian operator, the lovely Diane Irving. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Ed. Nice to see you again.
Really appreciate you joining us today. So, I mean, this is something that's quite close to your heart, isn't it? I know when I saw you recently, you were talking about this, you know, pubs offering a broad range of services. I mean, tell us a bit about it. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if we're looking at pubs as just a place to come for a drink, then we've had it, because we can't compete with supermarkets and things like that. So the pub has got to provide much, much more, and it provides social and community aspects. And I think that's what makes us really unique. That's what makes us different from lots of other places around the country and around the world. Yeah, I think we need to provide a service to our communities and a place for them to traditionally meet, you know, and to share in all sorts of emotions, highs and lows.
I mean, maybe Heath, this is where you need to broaden out from just drinking wine and going on holiday, perhaps. That's
well, it's not really a good thing, Ed. Like, this just... I think Diane's right. I think the problem is, I wish the government had the same view. They look at us as places of trouble. People get drunk. They fall out in the street. And you know what I mean? They frown upon alcohol and how it affects the NHS. And we're bad people. And publicans are bad people. But they don't look at how it is for mental health, for people joining, coming together, about society, especially with the heating coming up, all the, you know, the electricity bills and all that. I wish the government, I wish we had a minister that looked after hospitality, but I wish we had someone in government who went, you know, I love the pub. Do you hear them ever say that?
We had one briefly who did say he loved the bummer. I think he was a bit gutted to lose the brief, but he's no longer there.
Who's that?
What was his name? The guy's just gone. We had him on the podcast.
Famous guest.
Yes. Sorry, what? Do you want to finish that sentence?
Well, let's just say I've got some guys in here installing chocolate fire blankets in the kitchen.
That's your favourite phrase at the moment.
Well, it's true.
You used
though,
it on me
it?
Several times. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, though, I mean, yeah, he did profess to like the pub, but there you go. It doesn't mean anything when an MP or a politician professes to love pubs, though, does it?
And, yeah, we need action.
I mean, interestingly, we've just had the Great British Pub Awards. Diane was a finalist in that. And
congratulations.
Looked to all the things that those guys are doing across all the categories, you know, and I spent
but you know what the Tory, Ed, you know what the Tory government looking at? A low-skilled Labour award ceremony. That's how they look at us.
I mean, I love your optimism. I don't think they were even looking at it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, pricks.
They were too busy dancing to end people to...
Yeah, what is that?
I don't know.
What award were you up for, Diane?
Sorry, I missed that. What
award were you up for?
Green King Pub of the Year.
Nice.
But she didn't win, so don't rub it in.
Oh, sorry.
Don't rub it in, yeah.
I don't know who the judge was. He was a complete arsehole, apparently. Anyway,
you, Ed?
No, yes.
It was you?
Might have been.
God.
So, yeah, so I'm amazed Diane is still talking
so
to me.
You're so two-faced.
Okay, let's just talk about this for a little bit, shall we? Yeah.
Poor Diane.
Ed was the judge. Didn't make it, no.
I mean, it was a tough field. She did very well. I will be giving her full feedback.
No, you won't.
She didn't win.
You're going to hide behind the sofa.
So, could the winner not come on the podcast? Because that's how it's feeling now.
No, because we wanted to talk about a specific thing, which you've now completely digressed from.
Okay, go on.
And ruined it entirely. So we're talking about how what pubs do, how they benefit, or how they benefit society. And I was saying, because of the awards, you look at a lot of the finalists and the winners in the awards, and everything they do. I mean, there is so much more to pubs, isn't there? You know, like you say, the MPs and the politicians seem to have a jaundiced view of the sector that's filtered through the Daily Bloody Mail or something like that, of drunken antics and bad behaviour and all this kind of thing. Whereas you look at everything that the sector does, you know, providing sort of support to communities, providing facilities for people.
Charities, raising money.
I mean, the charity work's massive. I was talking to somebody the other day and said, we just don't recognise that. How much? I think it was Ian Payne, actually, at the conference. We do not actually recognise the sheer amount of money that pubs raise. I know that's your hobby horse, James, isn't it?
Over 100 million.
Mm.
Overall, and that's without counting the stuff, the free meals you give away for raffles, and you know what I mean, you're always getting badgered for that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's just in, you know, actual hardcore fundraising. It's pretty epic.
Mm. Yeah.
But it gets, and also about your hobby horse, but it is, you know, if the old guy milk builds up at the door, it's unlikely to be the person that's doing a 12-hour day or 14-hour day in the city that bothers to look at that.
It'll be the publican.
He's not getting paid. It'll be the publican that, you know, because Jeff doesn't come in for his pint every day, and that's where there's a lot of that welfare issue.
I heard a great story from an operator. Said, you know, during lockdown, you know, he had a customer. He used to come into the pub every time. Old fella in his 80s. He'd always be dressed up to the nines and well presented, all the rest of it. And they obviously didn't see him because of the lockdown. But we'll go and visit. And they knocked on his door, and he sort of shuffled to the door in his string vest and looking a mess and not in a good way. And they said to him, "You smarten yourself up. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to bring you some food." Came back the next day, and he was done up. He was all dressed up. He'd done all the stuff he normally did, because that's so important, isn't it? That social contact. That when we saw it being taken away, we realised, you know, how important it was. So, but we can't just sit there and we're talking this echo chamber that we have. You know, we've got to present this. We've got to really get out there and talk about it. Haven't we? Shout about it outside of the industry.
Doesn't matter what we think. Let's be perfectly honest.
We're too busy shouting at each other. That's the problem.
Well, you are generally. That is true. But I mean, Dan, talk about some of the things you do, because I mean, you've got some great little initiatives, you know, with kids and elderly and things like that. What are you doing?
I mean, we've always done stuff. I think frustrated ex-teacher. So when we started in the pub, we always brought in kids. Mm. I went during times when the pub wasn't open, because I like kids in the pub, but only when they're well behaved for a short time. I shouldn't really say
family
that,
pub of the year. There, sorry, Dan.
Runner up.
Yeah, I mean, we bring kids in. We used to bring them in. We still do every time school holiday week. We do kids crafts. We do a couple of mornings usually, where they come in and we set up tables with crafts and lots of bits and pieces, and they come in and they do that. Kids are happy.
Mm.
Parents come in, have a coffee, meet each other. We do family film afternoons during school holidays. So again, it brings an opportunity to come into the pub. It's free. They come in, we give them free popcorn for the kids, and hopefully the parents buy a coffee or a drink or something.
Smashing the whiskey at the back. Yep.
Yeah. so that's sort of something we've always done. We do the usual kind of kids' parties at Christmas and Halloween and all those kind of bits and pieces. And then we started thinking about, really, I suppose, during lockdown, about our older clientele. The stories you've just told there, you know, we have a lot of older gentlemen who come in an afternoon. They might come in for a couple of halves every day, but when the pub was shut during lockdown, they really missed that. And we're talking in our team this last couple of weeks about, you know, it was going to be a really tough winter for people, especially with heating costs and that kind of thing. So, you know, we've started doing a come in and chat morning, coffee and cakes. We've put on different things. We've got one of our charities, talking of the charity work this year, is Playlists for Life, which is a very simple charity, but it basically produces playlists for people with dementia, with the premise that these playlists when they're played help to bring people back a little bit and help to make connections. So we've done, we're just about to have in the next week or 10 days, a morning where one of our singers is going to come in and we're going to have a bit of a sing-along, hopefully, in the morning. I don't know how well that'll go without alcohol and just coffee, but we'll try it, we'll see. So we're kind of trying to think of things that we can do. You know, we've opened up study sessions in the morning when the pub's empty. We're just trying to think at the moment. We're having to pay these horrendous bills. People may as well use the facility if they can. So we've got student sessions where they can come in. It's at least warm and they can have a coffee and a top up for free, that kind of thing.
But Diane, how does that work? Like, if I was looking at it from a commercial, like a business point of view, yeah. Turning on my heating, turning on my lights and opening up for a bunch of students to come in and sit down when I technically, are you open normally or are you closed?
Usually there's someone in the pub because okay. We've always got the kitchens in. We've got it's a live above, so one of our managers always.
But what we do is before we open, everything's off as much as we can. But
yeah.
You're doing the opposite. You're almost like, okay, let's turn the heating on, let's get the lights on, let's get people in. Is it cost effective? Or is it more, it's not about the cost anymore, it's just about...
Time will tell. I mean, it's not all about the cost, really. I mean, it is about just building those connections with people. You know, we've got... It's funny at times, once we've just had our kids' craft mornings, you know, you see kids trying to drag their parents into the pub on the way home from school.
We need more of that.
But it's kind of building those kind of connections and people, you know, when we had lockdown, we did food orders for, we didn't do masses. We weren't like one of these like community heroes that were doing 500 meals on wheels or whatever. Yeah. But we started and we did it and they were delivered by our customers to our customers and that kind of thing. So we've done that, but then people liked that and people would pay, you know, other people were kind of paying forward for things and doing that kind of really good community spirited stuff on the back of it. So I think there's I think it does pay. I mean, can I measure that in very sincere economic measures right now? No, I can't. No. I can't say to you.
But it's not always about. I mean, it's not always about paying for your next holiday, Heath, as well. It's there are
these are
other benefits.
These are suppliers when they take it away.
I am conscious of time. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I'm waiting with bated breath to see if Heath is going to set up a kids' club. Out the Red Lion and Sun, because
mate, I don't even
I would
kids
pay
cubs
good fucking money
kids,
to see that.
Like, there's
that
no
would
way.
Be hysterical.
That's like my idea of hell. I look at my two kids and think, I don't need, like, there's no way I want
the
them.
The irony is, it's probably their idea of hell as well, it's probably never going to happen. But anyway, Diane, thank you very much for that, and we shall leave you to invite the old dears in and have fun with a sing song.
Yeah, absolutely. Keith,
take care, Diane. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
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 You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we are at the end of this episode. I mean, there's quite a lot to digest there. I mean, we started with Kate and Sasha. I think very clear message. We've basically just got to pick one thing and go for it.
I think VAT, and I think it's VAT for every business, wet, dry, I don't know, lip dancing clubs, whatever. Yep. It's 10% on everything. If we all get behind that and we stop internal bickering and start complaining about what we don't have and all that and what we didn't have in the past, and we just went, right, 10% VAT, we've got a chance.
Yeah.
Like, I really think if we all go at it, but we need clear direction from you, Ed, and your publication, how we go about it, and speak to Kate and speak to Sasha. But I think we can all agree, if we're paying 10% less on VAT, we'd all have more of a chance of surviving. And I think we've got to go hard at that. Like, really hard.
I mean, is that enough? I mean, this is the thing.
It's never going to be enough.
It's never going to be enough.
But 10% is a lot.
Yeah.
And
if you're paying 10%, it'll cover a lot of the stuff and it'll help us get through stuff. And we're just, we're skipping stones right now. We're jumping from stuff to stuff to get to where we need to be. We need to survive. And it's not about, this is not about winning. This is about surviving.
Yeah.
If we can survive, we get through winter, and then we get into next year, we've got a chance. But all we're doing now is survival. It's not about winning.
Yeah.
10% VAT, let's go.
I think the hardest thing was, as Kate said, you know, having recognised and been mentioned in the, you know, as a sector that needs the most help, to then get nothing makes you feel like you've been ignored. Whether that's the case or not, or whether
it's a really hard one.
You know,
yeah.
Is it that you just became close second?
Well, we were mentioned. We're in the, you know, we're in their front of mind. But unfortunately, they felt that the really rich needed supporting first, and the bankers.
As my mum would say, talk's cheap, money buys houses. And hospitality, we're not buying houses. We need.
That's probably where you're going wrong then. You need to be selling drinks, not buying houses.
Oh, fucking hell. We're just putting estate agents. And I you know, honestly, like this banking job, I'm trying to get this banking job where I'm not paying any. I'm in there, man.
It's not capped anymore, mate. It's great.
I know,
great.
I'm in there. I'm going, hey.
You must have been gutted when they reversed that 45p thing.
I know, I was gutted. Like, I gave up my £150,000 a year banking job. Yeah. I come back into hospitality. Yeah. Making 10 grand a year.
Let's stop making all those overseas trips to squirrel the money away as well. This is.
Yeah, and listen, the Cayman Islands, that was work.
That's all right, he's definitely a banker. I've heard people call him all the time.
He looks like one.
Big fat cat.
That's not what they call me.
Not cat. Listen, Ed, on a really serious note,
yes.
Do you have an iron? I'm looking at the shirt, and you're going to an event tonight, and it looks like you woke up in that shirt on the side of the road.
It's the stress of talking to you, Heath.
It was
crease free when I joined this conversation.
It's not even white. It's like
slightly yellowing.
What is that?
Musty smell.
Do you sweat that much all over?
Anyway, his teeth. If you haven't got an iron, make sure you got a jacket. Take it off. You'll have drip chase for shoes. God. You'll be so hot.
You're going to look like Danny DeVito as the Penguin.
With water retention.
I need to draw a line under this and the episode.
You can't draw
it's
a straight line.
I can't, no. Well, thank you guys for that that lovely end.
Just to be clear.
No.
No, seriously.
What
I'd like from you, Ed, is I think I know that you've got a couple of bunny rabbits and a kid and all that. But how about you lead the charge on this? Kate's given direction. Sasha's given direction. How about you turn the Morning Advertiser, Ed Rappington, gets forward and charges down on this, and we all get together behind it because we'll support you.
Yeah,
we're with you.
I think it's
you're our man. You're our Churchill.
This is something we all need to be doing. Yeah. This isn't just one person. This isn't just one industry, one company, one brand. I know where you're going with that, and I'm not indulging it in any way. We will support and we will push.
Okay,
and I think everyone needs to be doing the same.
Band
so
of brothers and sisters, or whatever we want to be called.
We happy few. No,
we will fight them on the beaches.
Almost highbrow. We'll
fight them on the beaches, not those ones because there's too much sewage. We will. Yay, Tory.
Yeah. Brilliant. Right, on that note, folks, thank you for listening to our dribbles, and we're delighted to be back on season three. Series three.
See you next Tuesday, Ed.
Thank you, Heath. We will be back in a couple of weeks, not on a Tuesday, and we will be taking a closer look at the clash of the World Cup and Christmas. Do join us then, but for now, it's goodbye. That was good, wasn't it?
Cheers,
goodbye from me. Yeah, yeah. Cheers, James.
Go Santa.
Goodbye from these two arses. And feel free to like, subscribe, and share far and wide. We will speak to you soon. Did one of you just do a meow?